Okay, let's get it. Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona. Glad to have you aboard with us here. Of course, you can catch me every weekday afternoon, ESPN Radio. Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, TV simulcast on Cox Sports Television, and right here for the Locked On LSU podcast. Very humbled by the growth we've had over the coming up on a year that we've done this podcast. And very humbled by the growth and appreciate everyone who has listened to and continues to listen to us. And for all who are just finding us as well. So a lot we'll get to. Ed Ogeron met with the media on Monday, updated some key injuries. We'll get to that. Sean Salisbury dropped the mic on After Further Review talking about Joe Burrow. You will want to hear this. And then Burrow, Cade York, Ed Ogeron all honored on Monday for their performances in Austin on Saturday. So we'll get to all of that here over the next 20 minutes or so, and glad to have you aboard with us. Let's start, though, with Ed Ogeron updating some injuries on some key defensive linemen, Glenn Logan, Rashard Lawrence, and Kalavon Chason.
You're not going to see Glenn Logan or Rashard Lawrence. I don't know if any one of them are going to be ready for the game. Kalavon is questionable. He'll be in a boot. You'll see him in a boot today. But he could be available for the game. I need to find that out. But the rest of the guys are going to be okay, I think.
So all things considered, LSU came out of Austin pretty healthy. Again, ankle injuries for Logan, Lawrence, Chasson's in a boot but could play this weekend. I think it's unlikely. Why run him out there against Northwestern State, you know, if you don't need him? Look, I think, you know, Rashard Lawrence and Glenn Logan had pretty good games. Logan had 3 tackles, 1.5 for loss. He did have the sack. Rashard Lawrence had just 1 tackle, but you could tell he was influencing the game, and certainly both guys made their presence felt on that the goal line stand in the first half, the 2 goal line stands in the first half. But at its most basic level, one of the good things, you don't want these types of injuries, but if you're going to have it happen, you'd like to have it happen at a point where you can give the player ample time to recover. The most obvious example would be Leonard Fournette in 2016. Fournette injured his ankle in camp, but they needed him against Wisconsin in the opener. So they gave him a shot, let him play. He re-aggravated the injury. Well, he sits out the next week against Jacksonville State. Then he's back for Mississippi State, and he re-aggravates it again. And then it was that sort of recurring problem all year long. The healthiest he was after he had gotten about 3 or 4 weeks off, and he came back against Ole Miss and ran for 284 in that game. But then he re-aggravated it against Arkansas, if you remember. And he wasn't going to play against Florida. And then they had the pregame kerfuffle, and he talked his way into the game, and he aggravated it again, and then didn't play in the bowl game. So in that season, because Fournette never gave his ankle ample time to recover properly, he only played in 7 games that season for LSU. You don't want that to happen with Logan, with Lawrence, because you need those guys for your stretch run. So this is critical because you've got Northwestern State, Vanderbilt, an open date, and then Utah State. You could literally tell those guys, hey, go chill for a month. Just get off your feet, get treatment, relax, get healthy, and we'll see you back here for the Florida week. That would be an extreme situation, but if you need it, you have that luxury right now. The other benefit is, with those guys out, it also gives you the opportunity to get other guys work. Here was Ed Ogeron talking about what they do on the defensive line with Logan and Lawrence out this week.
Well, you know, Neil Farrell's been playing very well. He's been playing very well. Braden will get more snaps at defensive end. Hopefully, Apu can get more snaps at nose tackle. Tyler starting and Apu behind him. Jarrell Cherry will be behind Glenn Logan. And then Nelson Jenkins can get some snaps. I think those guys could have to be out defensive line this week the way it looks.
So here's a great opportunity for Nelson Jenkins and Jarrell Cherry. Both guys haven't played a ton. You know, Jarrell Cherry actually didn't see the field at all last year as a true freshman. So he's a redshirt freshman, 6'3", 264 out of Dallas, and physically looks the part. I mean, he's the guy that fills out the uniform and looks like that super athletic edge guy. So I'm really excited about the possibility of seeing him get in the game and maybe make some plays. You know, Nelson Jenkins is 6'4", 286, another guy who's, you know, waited his turn, redshirted last year, played only in the Rice game, and you know, but took his redshirt year. So you got a couple of guys that are redshirt freshmen that are going to get their opportunity to get out there and rumble a little bit, maybe develop some depth that you otherwise might not have known you had. You hope you don't need them in key situations, but it's the benefit of having these games. And, you know, this is also a stretch where Ed Ogeron and his staff are going to have to decide which freshmen are going to redshirt. Remember, you can play in four games and still redshirt. But by the end of this stretch, before you get to that Florida game over this next month, you will have had all four of your non-conference games. Understanding a lot of these guys didn't play against Texas, but likely would get in against Vanderbilt if the game goes like many think it might. You know, Vanderbilt just got run out of the stadium by Purdue. So even though that's a road game at 11 a.m., we found out on Monday that Vanderbilt, by the way, is going to be an 11 a.m. kickoff in Nashville. But that would be an opportunity over these next three games with Northwestern State, Vanderbilt, and Utah State to get these guys playing time and experience to build as you move forward. So it's disappointing those guys are injured, but the good news is you got time to get their bodies healed and you get to get other guys some work there on the defensive front. And for what it's worth, Ed Ogeron, when he met with the media on Monday, did address this. He was asked if this is a game where he would look to get some of those guys that might be a redshirt candidate into the game.
Yes, we plan on playing guys that would normally not play if we can. But we're going to go in there with our first team, and we're going to be ready to go for 60 minutes. If it's a toe-to-toe game, it's a toe-to-toe game. If not, we'll be prepared.
Ed even referenced some of the upsets that had happened so far in college football. Of course, Georgia State beating Tennessee. We saw Army take Michigan to overtime. Northern Iowa took Iowa State to two overtimes. So he acknowledged, look, I took one of those on the chin against Troy a couple of years ago, and the team's going to be reminded of that this week, not to take this opponent lightly. So LSU, Northwestern State, as the week goes on, we'll talk more about the opponent in the game coming up this weekend. But for the most part, LSU an opportunity to get healthy and hopefully get a lot of young guys some playing time. All right, well, now I got a quick break. Of course, one of the gigantic stories coming out of this weekend was the play of Joe Burrow. But also, a big question is whether or not you can be an elite offensive team in college football today and that runs tempo and still be great defensively. Had that conversation with former NFL quarterback Sean Salisbury on Monday, and you'll hear that conversation next. Locked on LSU, your team every day. We continue, Locked on LSU, your team every day. One of the big questions coming out of Saturday's win for LSU has been defensively, can you run an up-tempo offense and still be elite defensively? So I went and crunched a bunch of numbers, and I looked at the top 10 offenses a year ago, and the recurring theme was that the teams that were in the top 10 offensively a year ago were all triple-digit defensively. You had Ohio State, which was 76th, but by and large, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State, Central Florida, those teams were in the triple digits defensively. Great offenses, but the tempo, the pace, the speed, it's the general thought is that's going to cost your defense, going to wear them down, they're going to give up yards and points. There were two outliers, though. Clemson had the third best offense in college football, fifth best defense in college football. Alabama had the sixth best offense in college football and the 16th best defense in college football. Those two teams played for the national title. So clearly, it can be done, but you've got to find a way to get elite athletes to run that defensive scheme at an elite level to maintain that. So what other teams have elite defensive talent? Well, Georgia tends to be one of them. And I think we could argue LSU could be in that number as well. I had this conversation with Sean Salisbury, and for some context, Sean, of course, played quarterback in the NFL, played it at Southern California. He tutors quarterbacks now, does morning radio in the Houston area, of course, a long time on ESPN and Fox, and also was considered for a job with the LSU staff, but his work tutoring high school quarterbacks would be a conflict with a individual associated with a prospect rule from the NCAA. So you might remember a couple of years back there was that flirtation with LSU and Sean possibly joining the staff, but because of that impediment, it didn't work out. But he knows the LSU staff well. He knows the talent very well. He knows Ed Ogeron very well. So his opinion matters very much. Now, you're going to hear a mic drop from Sean Salisbury in this these comments later on about Joe Burrow. But we started by asking that first question. Can you be a tempo offense, elite tempo offense, and still be elite on defense?
Yeah, I think it's a built-in excuse for people to say you can't. Now, here's the problem with that is you practice, whenever you see teams that are a lot of times spread, or we look at the Big 12 or Leach teams or Cliff teams or Dana teams, that they play so fast, you automatically think, well, can they recruit defense? And around they field too long. And I think it's a built-in excuse. Brady plays fast in the NFL at times. I know they huddle, and it's not tempo, but I think you can change it up. I do. And to me, elite athletes adjust to anything. They just do. They adjust to anything, whether you're a pass rusher in a 3-4 or 4-3, while you may be better at one, the great ones can still stand up and drop in coverage and still rush the passer, even though one of them may not be their strength. So I do. I don't think that you have to be. I mean, Clemson plays fairly fast. Alabama doesn't, you know, they play faster than Nick would want them to now than they did in the past, but they score. I'm not buying into that. I think it's built in excuse. Right? One game that their secondary gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards. Danny Green used to always tell us this in Minnesota, Matt. Now they gave up 38 points, which has got to stop. But he told me in our team this, he goes, I don't care if you give up 600 yards, keep them out of the end zone. I think that what you saw from LSU defense might be an aberration. And let's give Texas, Sam's a pretty good player. So I do think you can be an elite defense. Now, will you be the best? You're going to get plotting defenses like a Michigan defense that their offense doesn't spread it as much, even though they're trying to this year a little bit more with their coordinator in the past, line up in the eye like Stanford. Those types of defenses that, you know, it's a grinded out thing. Stats are going to be gaudy for the offense the more plays they have. So if you run 70 as opposed to 85, the defense usually is better. So I'm not buying into it, though. I think it's a built-in excuse to say, you know what, when we play fast, we bitched and complained because we want LSU to go for the throat offensively, and they did. Finally, instead of playing it not to lose, they played to win the game and put pressure on them instead of playing, hey, we're going to run the ball three and out, we'll punt three times in a row, we'll rely on our defense to punch somebody in the friggin' throat and hope to win. This one, nah, dude, we got a 2-touchdown lead, we'll throw again. We're going to line up and on 2nd-8, we may run it. On 1st-10, we're going to throw it. And they put pressure on Texas, so I'm not buying it. And sometimes you got to give up something to get something. I'll take an explosive offense and a really good defense with athletes. Then I will a plotting defense that stops you. College football, you got to score. And you got to score 3 or 4 touchdowns a week to be in a game with the big ones. No, I ain't buying it. I loved the approach by LSU offensively. They'll sew up the defense.
Amen. We've all had church. We can go home. So we're just going to cancel the rest of the show, and I'll just quit right now. Actually, contractually, they won't let me do that. All right, so what did you see from Joe Burrow on Saturday? I'll just leave it open-ended to take that whatever direction you want.
Yeah, Matty, you know what, for me, this position, I saw it with a bunch of different quarterbacks this weekend in different parts of the country, different days. Let's take a guy like Lamar Jackson. We know he's not an overly accurate passer, right? He was comfortable. They did not play safe. Well, he didn't throw it 40 times. They went for the throat right off the bat. He did what he does, made a few big plays. Can he sustain it? We'll see. Look what Kellen Moore did with Dak Prescott. What do we know about the Cowboys in the past? Play it close to the vest with Dak, play a lot of underneath stuff, protect his legs, and every now and again we'll mix in a deep ball. Huh. They were pushing it, and they stretched the field, and they made the Giants defend 52 and two-thirds or whatever and 100 yards. Different quarterback. Take a look at what you saw with Joe. Comfortable. You can tell that with Steve and Joe Brady calling plays, and with a new sense of philosophy saying, we're not going in this to protect the lead, dude. We're going in, Joe. It's your responsibility, both Joe's and Steve, and Joe Burrow in particular. It's for you to have the gut, for our play callers to have the guts to put you in position, and for you to go and not play it safe. Don't play scared, just don't play stupid. And to me, I looked at a guy who felt when he walked on the field that he was going to win the game throwing the football. I mean, Joe Burrow. And I'm a big body language icon to just what I see and then the mechanics of it. It wasn't just that he threw for almost 500. It's how he got there, Matt, throwing the quick game, then mixing in the deep ball, mixing a little RPO, throw the ball on time. The ball was out urgent, and it was decisive. And I can tell you this, from years when I've seen quarterbacks comfortable, even myself have been uncomfortable. when you are indecisive about either a system or about, do I need to protect this football or this lead and we're going to run it all the time, what do you expect from me? When the coach says, here's what we expect from you, dude. We're tired of LSU's defense having to limit in the run game. I'm not sure they told him this, but they created this in this game on the road in a hostile environment for a team that was supposed to be, quote-unquote, back. And Joe threw for 500 on him. That's not normal LSU football. And guess what? They got outside their comfort zone, and I loved it. And that's it. They choked him out, and it was a huge way to go about it. I hope they stay with this approach, because if you decide to play it safe, Alabama's going to run you out the building. If you decide to play it safe, A&M will score on you. This team's too good, and Joe Burrow, all he needed was to take the governor off, and we got a different player. Look at his first 2 weeks. I don't care who the defense is. Look at how he got there. And if they'll continue to attack this, they got a chance against Alabama and Tuscaloosa, because this quarterback's got balls, and Joe Brady apparently likes to stretch it out, and the passing game's more innovative, and Steve Ensminger's being more aggressive. That's how you win national titles, and then you get a stop or two against big teams like Clemson, like A&M, like Georgia, like Alabama, and that's how you win and go 12-0 instead of 11-1 and get to the place you want to go, which is the Final Four.
Sean Salisbury on Twitter, at Sean Unfiltered. Got me so fired up right now, man. I'm like,
it's so nice to see after all this time that when the game's on the line, they turn it over to the quarterback to go win it for us. And I can tell you confidence-wise what that does. Even if a guy tells you he's confident, when you're playing not to lose, it's like, well, okay, hopefully I won't make a mistake and I'll short arm this one and bounce to the ground. It was almost like he said, Joe, I don't care. It doesn't matter, dude. When we come back out, do not be prepared to hand this off unless necessary. We're throwing it, dude. We trust you to use the passing game as an extension of the run. This Saturday's game plan was the best approach I've seen by LSU in a long, long time when it comes to attack offensively.
Sean Salisbury, he joined me on After Further Review. You can hear our entire conversation with Sean online at 1045ESPN.com. Click After Further Review on demand, or however you're listening to this podcast, if you search 1045 ESPN Baton Rouge, you'll see the Sean Salisbury interview with the September 9th date line. It is Locked On LSU, brought to you in part by Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime, and let the Vivid Seats app help you get your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout and receive a discount of up to $100. Again, download the Vivid Seats app. Use the promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. It's Locked On LSU, your team every day. We will wrap up with some accolades for LSU coming out of the win over Texas. Wrapping up another edition of the Locked On LSU podcast, your team every day. When you go to Texas and score a landmark win over a top 10 team in a true road game, and you do it in a record-setting fashion with 45 points and your quarterback throws for 471 yards, second highest total in program history. And for the first time in program history, you have three receivers go over 100 yards receiving in a game. And your freshman kicker hits three field goals and three attempts. Chances are you're going to win some weekly honors. And that happened. For the second straight week, Joe Burrow was named SEC Offensive Player of the Week. Talked about his day. And he was joined by freshman kicker Cade York, who earned SEC Special Teams Player of the Week for his performance against Texas. Through two games, Burrow was leading the SEC in passing yards. Burrow was leading the SEC in touchdown passes. Burrow is leading the SEC in completions and leading the SEC in total offense. Yes, that is the LSU quarterback leading the SEC in passing yards per game, touchdown passes, completions, and total offense. You are not dreaming. This is reality. And Cade York, meanwhile, has made all five of his field goals, and he's 11 for 11 on extra points. You can't do much better than perfect, and Cade York is leading the SEC in scoring among kickers right now at 26 points, so averaging 13 points a game. So both Joe Burrow, Cade York, a big reason why LSU obviously is where they are at 2-0 and pacing the conference offensively. But there was also another award I handed out on Monday, and that was to LSU coach Ed Orgeron, who was named the Dodd Trophy National Coach of the Week. And understandably, he deserves it. It was the biggest win of the week, and it was the biggest win so far of the college football season. It's impossible not to honor him as such. Of course, the Bobby Dodd Coach of the Year Foundation and the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl hand out this weekly award, and ultimately will hand out the National Coach of the Year Award at the end of the season. But a great honor for Ed Ogeron and a much-deserved honor. And the other part of it, too, that I wanted to lead and possibly end here with this. When Ed Ogeron met with the media on Monday, he was asked, I believe by WFB's Jacques Doucet, to reflect a little bit on, you know, weathering that storm through the first 2 years in Baton Rouge to get where he is now. And, of course, you had the loss to Troy, and you had the blowout loss to Mississippi State, and you had the loss to Notre Dame, and you had a subpar recruiting class by LSU and by Ed Ogeron's standards. And then, you know, a year ago, they exceeded expectations, but still were shut out by Alabama and lost a road game to Florida and a road game to Texas A&M and went 9-3 just like they did in year one. Yet here they are, preseason top 10, they're 2-0, a giant win at Texas. They inked a top 5 signing class. They've got another top 5 recruiting class committed right now for the 2020 class. And Tigers are going to be favored in every game this season except one, and they have legitimate championship aspirations. It's naive to fail to acknowledge the job that Ed Ogeron has done. And he was asked about weathering the storm of those first 2 years, and I thought this was really introspective what Ed had to say. Give a listen.
Yeah, you got to stick to the plan and believe. You know, obviously there were some mistakes made early on, and but you know what? We got better. We got better. I do believe after the Troy game we made significant improvement, and our recruiting has gotten better. I have a great coaching staff right now. It took me 2 years to get the coaching staff the way I wanted it. It took us 2 years to get some depth on the offensive line. It took us 2 years to get more receivers that can get the ball. It took us 2 years to get the two running backs that we need to get in there. And then the big difference that has been in our football team is Joe Burrow, Joe Brady, last year Cole Tracy, and this year Cade York. Those guys have made a significant difference on our football team since I've been here.
I think it's very real, very honest to acknowledge mistakes were made early, which they were. But the other, the counter to that, or the addendum, the part that has to be mentioned in tandem with that is, in the face of mistakes, acknowledging those mistakes and then rectifying them. You missed on a quarterback 2 years ago, and so you went and found Joe Burrow. That was massive. You hired Matt Canada, and that was a mistake, but you corrected it after one season. You know, you could, honestly, if you want to look at history, you could look back at Jerry DiNardo hiring Lou Tepper and his inability to part ways with Lou Tepper after the 1998 season very likely cost Jerry DiNardo his job in 99. There's more to it than that, but it was certainly a significant factor. Coaches acknowledging when a mistake was made and working to rectify it. That's not just true in coaching. That's true in anything in life. But Ed Ogeron clearly has, and it's been for the better, the betterment of his program at this point. Boy, it's a lot of fun to be an LSU fan right now. So that'll do it for a Tuesday edition of the Locked On LSU podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast if you've not done so yet. That is just enormously helpful. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Rate us on iTunes if you could. That would be great. Share this, pass it along, tell all your friends that if they want daily LSU content, we're here every day on the Locked On LSU podcast. We'll see you tomorrow. Locked On LSU, your team every day.